software industry here in Charleston has earned a lot of attention and focus over the past 5 or 10 years, as large companies like Blackbaud and BenefitFocus continue to have success. Smaller companies like Boomtown and others continue to grow, and new startups emerge seemingly every day. However, the rest of the state of South Carolina has also been a leader in attracting and growing businesses, with the Midlands and the Upstate seeing success with the manufacturing sector. In today's increasingly digital workplace, businesses across the state, regardless of where they're located and which industry they're in, all face a similar challenge: finding, recruiting, and developing the technology talent necessary to manage and execute their operations. Rich Conti here with another episode of the Charleston Digital Corridor Tech Life Podcast, coming to you from the podcast studio inside the Charleston Digital Corridor's flagship incubator. This episode is brought to you by P3 USA. Founded in Germany, P3 is an international company that offers its customers consulting services and the execution of complex projects in the areas of operations and supply chain, e-mobility, software and engineering services. Visit them to learn more at p3-americas.com. All right, I'd like to welcome our guest today, Knud Flohr. Knud, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, and I'm looking forward about our conversation.
Great, me too. Well, let's start with your experiences at BMW and ultimately what led you to South Carolina in the first place.
You know, that's a very good question. You might hear from my accent that I'm a German. I'm raised and born and raised in Germany, grew up in Germany. I went to school. I did my mechanical engineering degree, and finally I ended up in the automotive industry. Starting with Volkswagen, I moved to BMW. And you know, it was in 1996 when BMW opened up a plant in South Carolina, the first international plant for BMW as a car manufacturer. And at that time, they asked me whether I wanted to participate in this. And being a typical German, I said, no, I'm not interested in this. Then my boss looked at me and he said, I would not recommend this answer. Okay, I went home and thought about this, and here I am. I came to South Carolina in 1996, starting up the plant in the Upstate. And at that time, you know, we wanted to produce 80,000 cars. We did two launches. And when my company told me in the year 2000 that I have to go back to BMW in Germany, I was a little bit reluctant. I wanted to stay. But at that time, I said, I will come back. And it took me only 15 years, and I was back in South Carolina.
Well, what were your perceptions of South Carolina when you first arrived back in 1996 to open the plant?
You know, it was a little, be very honest today, it was a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
Because I thought I could speak English, but I had no idea what the people were talking about in the South. We had a little bit of an intercultural clash on the view, how we build cars and how we do this. But it took only a very short period of time to get used to South Carolina, living in South Carolina. The weather, the friendliness of the people, and the business openness was a major experience in my life.
And how did you see when you returned 15 years later? What sort of had changed? Had much changed? What was your perceptions when you returned?
To be honest, it was completely different.
Really?
First of all, when we were in the plant, we thought we produced 80,000 cars only for the U.S. market. Now I'm back. Now when I came back, we produced 350,000 cars. And when I left last year, we produced 450,000 cars. Complete different setup. The plant at that time was 1 million square foot. Today we talk about 8 million square foot under the roof. At that time, we talked about manual processes. Today, it's fully automated, fully Industry 4.0 standard. All the innovations that BMW implemented worldwide, they are implemented into the plant. It's a top-notch, high-tech plant today. And Greenville completely changed.
Mm-hmm.
In the early days when I went to Greenville, they told me, oh, do not go to the West End. And it's a high crime area and you're not safe. And today it's one of the, I would say, the nicest city in the U.S. And the living is completely different. So it has a little bit of an international, intercultural feeling to be in Greenville.
And what's really changed or evolved over that time in terms of the business community, you know, particularly around technology?
You know, when we produce cars, we always produce the latest engineering level. So whatever is in the BMW cars, from the innovation point of view, is produced in the U.S. So, as I said, the entire plant changed. The interesting part about what we could do in the U.S. is implementing innovation in manufacturing. Talking about innovation in manufacturing, today we talk data.
Right.
We talk software. It's all software, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, augmented reality, digital twin in the plant. This is all data-driven. And there's a great spirit in the U.S. for innovation. You know, in Europe, you have a lot of restrictions on data privacy and. So we could try a lot of new things in the plant in Spartanburg. And from this point of view, it turned out into the highest innovation place, not only the biggest plant in the BMW network, it's also the highest innovation plant. And from this point of view, yeah, I'm very proud about the operation in the U.S.
That's great. Now, what brought you to Charleston? I understand recently you've got an appointment as a distinguished professor in industry practice with the College of Charleston. How did Charleston get on your radar screen, being all the way up there, upstate in Greenville?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So basically what happened, is that I joined BMW in 1988, and I retired in September last year from the position of being the president and CEO of the plant. And this was part of my deal with BMW, by the way, because I was responsible for operations in China. I was the plant director in South Africa, two times a plant operation in Europe. And I was the head of corporate quality. So basically, I said, okay, my last assignment at BMW, I want to go back to South Carolina. So here I am, 5 years on normal terms. Then it was time for retirement. I retired from the plant. Now here's my retirement party. And, you know, it's a big farewell party. And in the room, in the audience, was the president of the College of Charleston. I didn't know him. He didn't know me. And as usual, when I did my farewell speech, I was a little bit complaining about the education system in South Carolina, because we could not get the workforce that we needed, especially when it came to talent. We are always searching for high talent. And I met him afterwards, and we started to discuss. And then he said, okay, if you, he said it in nicer words. That's the German version now. But he said, okay, if you think there's a problem with the education system in South Carolina, help us to change it. Mm-hmm. And then I said, yeah, that's fair enough, because it's easy to be in the victim role and complain. But the victim role is easy, but it's not really, nowhere it's appreciated. So I said, yes, I'm going to help you to change it. And in the course of this discussion, we discussed, what do we need in the industry? And he asked me to be the industry network or the liaison to the industry. Get your industry partner together. And we talk in Charleston. We talk about Bosch. We talk about Mercedes. We talk about Siemens. We talk about Kion. You know, there's a lot of industry that moved into Charleston. And I got them together and we started to discuss about what do we need. And finally, now we are at the, we have the idea that we create a new branch in the College of Charleston for an advanced manufacturing engineering school. A lot of people ask at that time, how does it fit to a liberal arts college? And I said, it fits perfectly to a liberal arts college, because when we talk about the engineers of the future, they have to apply science. we need to have these engineers on the shop floor or next to the shop floor, because they have to do all this digital virtual planning for the plant. And from this, we are missing an undergraduate program. On the other hand, we need engineers that are world citizens. So when you get into an international company like BMW, you know, you will be faced with software comes from India, parts come from China, technology comes from Germany, and everything is melted together in the US. So, and here comes the liberal arts piece into the pie, because to learn a second language is very, very important, because this opens up your mind for a different culture. To do psychology is very good, because you have to work together with a lot of different cultures. And on top of this, getting out of this ordinary engineering into the new world of engineering, and this is mostly computer science, software, applied science in the Industry 4.0 world, makes a perfect match. And after nobody does it so far in the South, so we said, okay, let's do it. Now we are going to build up this or advance this engineering program of the college. And by the way, Charleston is a very, very nice place to live.
That doesn't hurt. You talk about the workforce challenges that we've got. I've heard a secondhand quote from you that what's really needed is a revolutionary approach, not an evolutionary approach. Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, let me get a little bit back in my history.
Okay.
So, you know, when I started into the 80s and we went into the 90s, it was all about lean manufacturing. Lean, no buffers, supply chain, doesn't matter where it is, the entire world. We are a global village, and. Basically, this all changed. The shop floor changed in the way that there's very, very rare manual work anymore. Today, we talk about robots. We talk about human robots, not caged-in robots, human robots. Everything is done in the virtual world. The high-tech plant of the future might be empty from the typical operator labor workforce. That's a revolution in itself.
Yeah.
This is not automation. That is a real, real revolution. Now we need to have higher qualification that can teach, plan all of this technology and doing all of this in the virtual world. This has basically nothing to do with the kind of mechanical engineering that I did my entire life. It is, on the technology side, a revolution. And we have to make these young people ready for the challenge. And there are two major components in this. We have to give up some of the old engineering beliefs, science, mathematical equations or whatever. So everything that is built into the software today has to be applied. And the software is very, very, very good. So do we need to do any mechanical calculations? No, we don't need it, because any software you use today, including the simulation, is better, and forgive me, than any human brain on mechanical engineering. That's a revolution in the industry. The second part is the reorganization of the supply chain. So we are used to, we buy everywhere in the world, we import everything, everybody supplies to everybody. With the COVID crisis, we saw shattered, done, over, supply chain interrupted. We saw a shortage of parts. Semiconductor is one of the key words. We saw a huge shortage in medical supply. From this point of view, we have to rethink the entire way we do manufacturing in our supply chain, in the tier one, tier three. We need to reshore. So we need to bring much more manufacturing back to the US. We have outsourced way too much. We need to bring it back to be sustainable and robust in what we need. And to bring back all this manufacturing to the US, we need to be highly competitive. Complete different way of thinking. Not outsourcing, insourcing, competitiveness, rearranging of supply chains, and there's no more forklift driver in the future, the plant is 100% built on human robots and automation. That's, even for me, 30 years in the business, this is what I name a revolution.
Yeah. And what do you think some of the obstacles are to making the type of revolutionary changes that you just talked about?
People. It's only people. Yeah.
Resistance to change?
Resistance to change is always a very big topic. But, business is people. Mm-hmm. What I learned when I was a young engineer, I thought it's about quality. When I got into the premium segment, I thought innovation. Mm-hmm. Today, I know it's people. Because people are driving the business, and you need people to stay, to be ambitious about what they do, and to stay in South Carolina, stay in the business, and ramp up and consistently improve the business. And this is why I tend to go on the people side. Now at the end of my career and with all my experience. And the best way to do this, from my point of view, is when they leave the high school, get them, I would say, addicted to science and mathematics and manufacturing. And then let's go through the 4 years of college together. Not here's the college and there's the industry. We do it together. Every student stays in contact with the industry permanently. Mm-hmm. Not only an internship, not only a capstone project. Permanently, industry pays for this. Industry pays scholarships, project money, whatever. Mm-hmm. But we use the resources together. And let me give you one example for high-tech software today. When industry buys a license, they pay millions a year for a license. Mm-hmm. No college in the world can keep up with the technology requirements of industries of today. And we are changing our knowledge every 5 years. Mm-hmm. It is so fast. So the students, they need to be able to use the current software level and equipment that we use in industry during their study time. So when they are finished after 4 years, they are ready. Right. They do not have to be retrained and try to find a foot in the company or go there. They are ready for the business to work with the latest technology that no college, I can just say it again, no university can ever afford this kind of equipment. But they are ready to work. And from this, in industry, we like to earn money. So from this point of view, we have productive engineers from the beginning that know exactly what they are getting into.
What do you think some of the advantages we have for us here in South Carolina in making this type of transition that you talk about, which is extremely, ambitious and, as you said, challenging and, from a people aspect, but what are the opportunities that we've got in front of us based on sort of how the industry has grown here over the past, decade or so?
Yeah, I know South Carolina and the industry since 1995, '96 when we came here. I worked in China, I worked in Africa, I worked in Europe. I can truly say, and this is not just because I'm here, this is the most business-friendly place in the world I have seen. And this is why we grew at the BMW plant from 80,000 cars to 450,000 cars. And 70% we export. Yep. So we produce the cars for the world in South Carolina. And this is the point of, what do I mean with business-friendly environment? It is, you get an extension of the airport, you get an inland port, you get a railway line, you get an extension of the interstate, you get the infrastructure, you get building, and maybe when you are lucky, you get a little bit of tax exemption or something like this. So this is all the business-friendly infrastructure. Pull in the industry, the manufacturing. This made South Carolina one of the top manufacturing places in the U.S. But now people and companies, when they want to relocate, they more and more ask for human capital, not for financial capital, because this is most of the time given. Where's the human capital? Because to implement, to start up, to launch one of these factories requires much more brain than we needed 20 years before. And there is the chance in South Carolina with the universities, with the colleges, to produce, and forgive me this word, no? So a lot of people don't like the word production and product together with the student, but we have the potential to do this. A lot of people want to relocate to the South. Best business opportunities. The career paths are here. Let's do it.
Knut Flohr, former president and CEO of BMW Manufacturing and distinguished professor of industry practice at College of Charleston. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That'll do it for another episode of the Charleston Digital Corridor Tech Life podcast. And I want to thank you all for joining us. I also want to thank P3 USA for sponsoring this episode. Founded in Germany, P3 is an international company that offers its customers consulting services and the execution of complex projects in the areas of operations and supply chain, e-mobility, software, and engineering services. Visit them to learn more at p3-americas.com. As always, thanks to the Charleston Digital Corridor for making the show possible. A quick reminder before we go, you can find us wherever you find your favorite podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe, as well as leave us a rating and a review. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to keep up with the show. Thank you.